Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Hi, this is PodSave the UK. I'm Nish Kumar, and this week I've got a very special guest co-presenter.
It's me. I'm Liz Bates, and today I'll be joined in the studio by Will Young. And let me just say, teenage me is very excited about that.
Yes, he'll tell us about his journey from pop idol to political campaigner.
Plus, why Labour has finally decided to call for a ceasefire in Gaza.
Hi, Liz.
Hello.
Thanks for sitting in for Coco Khan this week.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been on the show before, but your day job is political correspondent at Sky News, though you have been absent from your day job for a very specific reason of late.
I have had a child.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. And I have been successfully keeping that child alive for 5 months. And so when your producer rang me yesterday and said, did I want to come and do, not that I'm not a huge fan of this podcast, but he basically offered me the chance to leave the house for a few hours. And I was like, yes, please. So here I am.
You didn't even ask any follow-up questions. I don't care what
no,
it is.
No, he didn't even get to the end of the sentence. I had no idea what he was offering. He could have been saying, do you want to go on a trip to the local sewage works? And I was like, sure, I'm in. I get to leave the house. That's it. That's good enough for me. Usually I'm the political correspondent on Sky News. It's rather different from this. It's quite formal. It's lots of light studios, huge amount of makeup. So this is a nice treat for me. And last time I came on, when I was a guest, I remember waiting to come onto the show and just hearing you guys doing swearing. And I was very excited because
yeah,
I was like, whoa, a bit of swearing. Not allowed to do that on Sky. So I'm doing a lot of fucking swearing on this podcast.
Listen, fucking swear away, mate. If there's one thing I like to cultivate, it's an atmosphere where people can swear and look as bad as they want to. And I lead by example on that, Liz.
You are being incredibly successful at that. It says in the script here, prompt Nish to tell me about New York. So tell me about your adventures in New York. My image of you in New York is sort of Carrie Bradshaw, like sitting,
yes,
looking wistfully out of the window. What came first, the laughter or the love, or, you know, something like that? Is that what it's like?
Yeah, that's right. I'm frequently tottering around in my Louboutins in a pink miniskirt. It's quite the spectacle. I would say the main image of me in New York, Liz, is I go from work meeting to work meeting to stand-up gig to restaurant where I eat like I've been told that the apocalypse is imminent. I've been doing a sort of, I'd describe it as a sort of gout tour of Manhattan and Brooklyn.
Okay. It's a bit further from Carrie Bradshaw than I was imagining.
I don't remember an episode of Sex and the City that ends with Carrie Bradshaw going, and that's when I realised maybe I needed a Rennie.
Just chugging Gaviscon.
Yeah, it's a special Sex and the City indigestion special. It's safe to say the internet shared pretty strong thoughts on Sony's newest movie, Madam Web.
On yesterday's Keep It episode, hosts Louis and Ira break down the Spider-Verse spin-off film and J-Lo's This Is Me Now movie.
Plus, actress Danielle Brooks joins to talk about her film, The Color Purple.
For more pop culture coverage, tune in to new episodes of Keep It every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Rarely does politics feel so out of step with the real world than on days like today. So on the day we record this, Labour has been attempting to avoid what's essentially a political trap laid for it by the SNP over its stance on Gaza. The SNP's tabled a motion calling for an immediate ceasefire, and Labour is desperate to avoid a repeat of what happened the last time the SNP did this in November when 56 Labour MPs rebelled, including 10 front benchers. one of whom was Jess Phillips, who all quit in order to vote for it in defiance of the Labour leadership's position. Labour's new position, supporting an immediate humanitarian ceasefire, is set out in an amendment to the SNP motion. Here's Shadow Foreign Secretary David Lammy explaining that Labour has shifted because the situation in Gaza has evolved.
Keir Starmer and I have been calling for weeks for the fighting to stop, for aid to get in. The situation has evolved, and on the ground it is intolerable, and the Rafah attack cannot go ahead. We are following our Five Eyes partners, Australia, New Zealand and Canada, who a few days ago made it clear that there has to be an immediate humanitarian ceasefire. We are mirroring that language, and indeed the language now of the United Nations. Everyone wants the fighting to stop, but we also want this to be a permanent cessation of violence. It's absolutely clear that that ceasefire has to last, and our motion also talks about the circumstances in which we can see a lasting and sustainable immediate ceasefire.
Liz, talk me through how we've come to this point.
If we take a step back from all of this, what has really happened is, and this happens so much in Westminster, is that the most serious, important politics that can ever take place, which, you know, is to do with an international conflict where people are dying right now and suffering horrendous experiences. Instead of Westminster focusing on working with the international community to get to a serious and measured position that could actually change things in the Middle East, we get this ridiculous, petty Westminster politics that kind of takes all these arcane procedures in Parliament and people trying to use them to gain tiny little bits of political advantage. And what you're really seeing here is the SNP with their motion and the government, I think, with their amendment, they are trying to exploit genuine divisions, I think, within the Labour Party. And all probably because it's an election year and people are looking at the possibility of a Labour government and thinking, well, this is one area where we can try and divide the Labour Party and gain a political advantage from it. How incredibly pathetic.
The conversations that have been happening sort of as we record today have been about whether the Speaker of the House, Lindsay Hoyle, was going to allow the Labour amendment to the SNP motion to happen. And we just learned that Lindsay Hoyle is going to allow that. So they're going to debate the SNP motion with the government amendment and the Labour amendment.
The convention would usually be that the SNP would lay a motion, the government could amend it, and no other party would usually amend it. But I assume because of the gravitas of the situation and presumably the strength of feeling from MPs, they've decided to vote on all the different amendments, and those votes will take place this evening. So by the time this podcast goes out, we'll know what the upshot of all of this is. But I think important to remember as well, like, look, this is not the vote on the Iraq war. We're not deciding to send troops in. We're not deciding on government legislation or government policy. This is just a motion. So this is just Parliament saying this is what we think. And there are quite thin dividing lines between the different motion and amendments that have gone down because, let's be honest, every single MP in the House of Commons would like to see an end to the violence in the Middle East. There are differences of opinion on how we can get there. It's also worth pointing out as well that, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu is not sitting watching BBC Parliament waiting to see which amendment gets through. It's all utterly pointless in using parliamentary procedure to play politics. And it's irritating that we end up, you know, going down these rabbit holes and covering this as if it's really important. It's actually not.
The US is now calling for a temporary ceasefire. Presumably, Liz, that's of more consequence to Benjamin Netanyahu. Is there a sort of suggestion that maybe some of the international opinion is turning on his response to the terrorist attacks on October the 7th?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's been coming for a while, right? The shifting position when it comes to a ceasefire. And I think that's because of the images that we've seen coming out of Gaza. The only, I think, government that makes any difference to what goes on in Israel, the only government that really holds sway is the US. And so I think it's important that their position has changed. They're not going to take any notice, really, of certainly not the leader of the opposition and definitely not the leader of the SNP. You know, Rishi Sunak has a tiny part to play in this, and that's really, you know, conversations that he will have. And David Cameron, of course, on the world stage. But, you know, we have grand ideas about the amount of sway we hold. It's all about the US. And if we can hold a bit of sway with the US administration, that's all we can do, really.
So away from this debate, Liz, sort of elsewhere in British Westminster politics, what has been going on with the Conservative Party this
week? Well, speaking of petty politics, so in Toryland, Business Secretary Kemi Badenoch, who I know you've had as villain of the week on this podcast before, who is the bookie's favourite, of course, at the moment to be the next Tory leader, has come out swinging this week in an astonishing row with the man she sacked from his job as the chair of the post office, Henry Staunton. Now, Staunton gave an interview with the Sunday Times in which he made a number of claims, the most damaging of which was that he said a senior civil servant had told him to stall on compensation payments to victims of the Horizon IT scandal. Badenoch reacted with a series of furious tweets before then coming to the Commons the following day to brand Staunton a liar.
It is not fair on the victims of this scandal, which has already ruined so many lives and livelihoods, to claim, as Mr. Staunton has done, that this is being dragged out a second longer than it ought to be. For Henry Staunton to suggest otherwise, for whatever personal motives, is a disgrace, and it risks damaging confidence in the compensation schemes which ministers and civil servants are working so hard to deliver. I would hope that most people reading the interview in yesterday's Sunday Times would see it for what it was, a blatant attempt to seek revenge following dismissal.
Now, the Tory press loved it, but Staunton said he was standing by his comment about delaying compensation and has now published a memo suggesting he was told by a senior civil servant to hobble into the next election and not rip off the band-aid in terms of finances. This latest memo from Staunton is it's quite funny, really, because it's a little note that he made to himself in the meeting that he's produced as evidence. We can choose to believe him or not, but writing a note to yourself is not really evidence. But yeah, I think more broadly, I don't know what you think about this, Nish, but when it comes to the post office scandal, the last thing you want really as a government is to be on the wrong side of it. And I think Kemi Badenoch is very much, by continuing this public row, is in danger of getting on the wrong side of this.
I can tell you the one thing I never, ever want to hear again in conjunction with something to do with a member of parliament, and that is in a string of furious tweets. That is not the way that she should be engaging with this issue. Rishi Sunak has offered a defence of her based on a question asked by Keir Starmer at Prime Minister's Question Time. I would say the defence was not fulsome. I would say Rishi Sunak offered a technical defence of Kemi Badenoch.
Yeah, I mean, it's really difficult for Rishi Sunak because it's one of those, do you want her in the tent or outside of the tent? You certainly don't want her to be gathering allies and causing problems on the backbenches, but I'm sure he doesn't. I'm sure he's not a huge fan of the way she conducts herself either. I mean, I should just say as well, there's another very Kemi story out today, which is that she appeared in front of a committee of MPs to talk about ongoing trade talks with Canada that she insisted were still going on. And when they checked with Canada, they said, oh no, we're not having trade talks anymore. And yet she has come out again, guns blazing. No, we are. I mean, look, I'm no expert on trade talks, but I think at least the country that you're talking to needs to know that they're going on for there to be any chance that they're going to be a success.
Kerry is and always has been full of shit. And that's one thing she's been consistent on.
There's certainly a pattern emerging, I would say.
That's a sort of freedom, like an intrinsic knowledge, like you are part ocean, ocean is part you. You have salt water in your body. You are part of this.
Oceans, life underwater. A new podcast all about the oceans and the mind-blowing life within them.
Subscribe now to Oceans, Life Underwater on your favorite podcast app.
The New York Times calls BritBox the best of British telly. Stream acclaimed original series, including Payback, starring Peter Mullen, Stonehouse, starring Matthew McFadyen, and Archie, the man who became Cary Grant, starring Jason Isaacs. Plus, discover powerful new series like Three Little Birds and the return of BAFTA-winning drama Time, starring Bella Ramsey, Tamara Lawrence, and Jodie Whittaker. Stream the best of British TV only on BritBox. Start a free trial at BritBox.com.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at King's Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at King's Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. King's Island is now open weekends.
Before there was X Factor, before there was American Idol, there was Pop Idol. Our guest this week, Will Young, shot to fame in 2002 after becoming the first winner of a show that became a huge global phenomenon.
The winner of Pop Idol 2002 is Will!
Number one singles and albums followed, as did an acting career on screen and on stage. And now, Will Young is making waves as a political activist.
Well, welcome to the show, Will Young. It's so nice to have you here.
I love seeing those clips back.
Do you?
You know what's really nice is I get to see clips of my family and friends in the audience.
That was your brother?
That was my brother, who's dead, sadly. Sorry to say that.
I know. But I saw the documentary, but I noticed that he was in the audience there. And it must be, is it nice for you to see?
It's lovely. Yeah. I love it. And I just like seeing the awful haircuts all my friends had. I mean, they are really, really bad haircuts.
I remember you talking about your politics degree on Pop Idol, I think. Was it discussed at the time?
Yeah, they probably asked me to stop. I mean, it was like the antithesis of a pop star. You know, posh, quite nerdy, shy.
Politics student.
Gay. I mean, people could have told that. Obviously, I had to come out publicly later, but my first song was Aretha Franklin. You know, it was pretty obvious, in a tank top. Talking about politics.
Can I make a confession, though?
Yeah, go on.
Because I was 15 at the time when you won Pop Idol, and I remember you talking about, I think you did talk about politics on the show, and I was a real politics nerd, obviously. And so I had a bit of a crush on you.
Yeah, you were. Oh, sorry, I hit the mic.
So I was like, well, maybe me and Will Young are going to get married.
It wasn't you that wrote the letter saying, dear Will, now you've come out as gay, I'm really worried for you because no woman will marry you.
It wasn't. No, thankfully it wasn't me.
Which I have framed.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It was the sweetest letter I've ever had in my life. They were nasty at once. Some weren't so kind.
So, look, a petition you set up calling for an end to medical testing on dogs was actually debated at Westminster this week. Can you just explain what you're calling for and why?
Yes. Yeah, I was there. It was really fascinating, actually. I'm calling for an immediate ban on testing on dogs. So it was sort of during COVID, and then I came across this place called MBR Acres, and I just couldn't believe there was this breeding facility, a puppy farm, basically, in Cambridgeshire. It's been going for about 30, 40 years, actually. It was used to be called something else. They breed up to 2,000 dogs a year, and the dogs are then farmed out to laboratories around the UK to be tested on. But they're also tested on inside the place. So sort of trigger warning before I say what happens to them. But they're bled out on site for the whole of their life. You know, no anaesthetic. There's no limits. There's no regulations on how many puppies the female dogs, how many litters they're meant to have. So sometimes they have up to 2,000 puppies in their life. I mean, it's just awful. So I was just feeling increasingly sort of a bit disgusted by it all and a bit helpless. And then I have a rule that is, well, if I feel helpless and hopeless, I have to remind myself that I'm not. So I ordered some handcuffs on Amazon, and then set off and drove up to MBR Acres and handcuffed myself to the gates, which was hysterical.
There's a lot to unpick there.
No, there's so much.
Not least what that's done to your Amazon recommendations.
Well, actually, that's, the algorithm's definitely changed quite a lot. It's got a lot of love balls suddenly being thrown my way. But I was sort of shameless about it and just was ringing everyone, you know, like local papers, just going, hello, I'm Will Young and I'm here. And I love shamelessly plugging myself if it's not about stuff to do with me, you know, so I'll do it for a charitable cause. You know, but I wouldn't ring up the sort of Cambridge Gazette and go, hi, I'm on tour. Just, do you want to talk to me? and it did get a lot of coverage. I thought, I need to get all these people, all these different groups talking to each other. I think shared knowledge and information and creates more cohesion, more power, you know. So I sort of started just talking to lots of people, from Chris Packham to Animal Aid, Animal Free Research, Zach Goldsmith, you know, we're not politically aligned, but animals, he loves animals. And he actually left the Tories because of the lack of animal welfare bill that they didn't follow through, which I thought was very admirable. And so then met with Keir Starmer. I sort of had an in there. And it sort of snowballed, spoke at the Labour conference. I mean, I just chased down people. I must be so annoying.
But that's the advantage, right, of kind of being famous, that you get people are willing to speak to you, and you can sort of, you can make change happen.
Yes.
Can I ask you about the your experience in Westminster Hall? So you went to that debate in Parliament.
Yeah.
What did you think of it?
It was amazing, actually. They had a really good turnout of MPs. I really enjoyed listening to all the points. I quite enjoyed the kind of ritual of the committee. I thought that was really interesting. But I did walk out when the Tory minister started talking.
Just in protest.
I don't like being gaslit. So I stood up purposefully, made a little bit of a sort of a noise, and I walked out. So I didn't wait for the government response, because I just don't trust them. And I stopped dealing with Tories because it was triggering me. And I just felt genuinely traumatised after being in their presence. So I just made a decision that I'm just not going to deal with them.
Let's hear a clip from the debate. Here is one of the Conservative MPs, Tracy Crouch.
Now, I naturally, as somebody who's campaigned on these issues for a long time, fall into the majority view on animal testing when it comes to cosmetics. And actually, I'd like to thank my honourable friend for Red Ruth and Cameron for the work that he did on this as Secretary of State. However, when it comes to medicines, I tend to melt into a mess of complexity, because sometimes personal experiences and those of our constituents can muddy a binary view on this issue. Now, I have absolutely no doubt that the success of my breast cancer treatment is down to experiments that have taken place in the past on animals.
Yeah, she was really good, actually. And I thought, I mean, she is an example of a good Tory MP, so they're not all awful. But it's about a roadmap. So I've asked for sort of immediate ban of testing on dogs. And we had some good results, because they have pledged more funding, which is great, towards non-animal testing methods and labs. So I think we're going in the right direction. And I think Labour have always been better on animal welfare. Yeah.
Tracy Crouch later herself clarified that she doesn't advocate or support any testing on dogs.
She did, yeah.
You know, we're always interested and excited by the idea that people who have a specific campaign that they want to get behind can actually translate it into political action. So you feel positive about the experience?
Yeah, it really can. I mean, you know, I'm very aware of what I bring to it. So I was canvassing, I won't say who, but I was canvassing one of the MPs in that petition. And it was like something out of a drama, like an hour before the person was going in. It was hysterical. Ringing their office. Then I tracked down them to their local constituency. And I think just because...
Oh, my God, you were lobbying them hard.
I was lobbying. It was... No, and it was... I really enjoy it. I was really lobbying.
And what was the response like?
It changed.
They're like, stop harassing me, Will Young.
Well, I mean, we are with lawyers, but I think they sort of think if they know what I do for a living, I suppose it's a little bit more interesting having an actor and a pop star ringing up rather than someone from the local, you know, mealworm association or whatever it is. You know what I mean? I suppose given the order of their days, it's probably worth a phone call, maybe. Then that's the way I see it. I've managed to get the attention of some really good people. And also I'm aware that I can give my support to different causes and different parties. And that comes with something. You know, I'm not Taylor Swift. I'm not changing the election, but I'm aware of what I bring. And I get a lot of satisfaction from it. And to be honest, I just keep on coming back to the sights of the dogs. And I just think this is why you're doing it. You know, so like most of my things in my life are ego-led, but this isn't ego-led. I suppose that's rather refreshing in itself.
Dog-led.
It's dog-led.
You've not sort of got into politics later in your life, as we just previously discussed. You've always been interested in politics. You studied it.
Yeah.
You'd studied it at university, I think, by the time you got onto Pop Idol. Mm. So why the interest in politics?
I remember doing it at A-levels and I found it really interesting working out how our country runs, you know, or could run, or, you know, should run. I'm interested in the corridors of power. I do find it fascinating.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on Western stuff?
It's just so interesting. I mean, the first time, now I've sort of been going there a fair amount, I went to a very grand school and it was I was very used to grandeur in a building or in an institution. And I always, by the way, was always really grateful for it and appreciative, which is sort of odd as a sort of child. But I remember walking around thinking, God, you were lucky to be in this. But, you know, it was the most incredible grounds, incredible building. So going into Parliament, I don't get bamboozled by the grandiosity of it. But weirdly, there's a sort of slight sort of comfort to it, which it disturbs me because it's because I'm so institutionalised because I went to boarding school.
That's what David Cameron said.
Oh,
David
really?
Cameron said it's like, wow. It's just like going to school.
Yeah. Well, yeah, well, good old David's good back again, isn't he? Good old David, saviour on a white horse. God.
Do you think that that's part of the problem with access and getting more variety in
yes.
the backgrounds of members of parliament? You know, if you segue from boarding school to parliament
yes.
and you're not fazed by any of it.
Yeah, 100%. It literally, the Houses of Parliament looks like the dining room that I used to have my tea in. And
wow.
so you feel really comfortable there. Yeah. But for me, because I've done a lot of work on myself and sort of kind of want to not just exist in my own echo chamber and bubble as much as possible, it also feels it's slightly discomforting to me how a part of me is really settled quite quickly. But then the other weird thing is you have the two main parties and it's like being in Harry Potter because you just have the Tories are like Slytherin. I mean, they just wander around and the people around them, because they're so, you know, they're not in a good place, are they? And they're not going to hopefully be in government. So they just give off this energy. It's not just the MPs, it's the people around them of like slightly embittered and slightly jaded traffic wardens. You know, they're just like, I don't care, I'm going to give you a ticket anyway. Do you know what I mean? So they're a bit like that. And then the Labour are really like quite jolly. And also what I've noticed, and I might have this wrong, but it's
only who do you consider Hufflepuff then?
Oh, Caroline Lucas probably. She's probably Hufflepuff, isn't she? Love Caroline Lucas. But the other thing is, I think I noticed a lot more diversity in the Labour people and in their teams. It just feels so much more diverse and real, you know, and it just doesn't feel like that with the Tories. And then you go into the chamber and you watch the debates. And I mean, I went into one PMQs. I didn't want to because I knew I would find it so outrageous. And it just is outrageous. It's just awful. People are just like on their phones, WhatsApping, you know, chortling away, wah, 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 wah. You know, very kind of male-led. It feels like the voices seem to be very male-led because I think women are just a bit cooler and like, screw this, what's going on? So it's just a lot of men going, wah, wah, wah. And I'm thinking like, you're running the fucking country and it just makes me so angry. So that whole element I don't like. And also it's very intoxicating because it's corridors of power.
Yeah.
So I can see why people get bewitched by it.
I think that's a really interesting question because I've thought about this a lot. Because somebody like you, somebody like David Cameron, sorry to lump you together because I know you won't enjoy that. But you know, if you went to a private boys' school and then you go and work in the House of Commons, that feels comfortable. If you're like me and you come from a comprehensive school in South Yorkshire, It's fucking intimidating. And when I joined as a journalist 10 years ago, I literally didn't speak for like 5 years. And every time I went down and sat somewhere, someone would come up to me and be like, excuse me, that's someone else's chair.
Wow.
And I didn't know it was someone else's chair. I just accidentally sat in it. You're always being kind of moved along or quiet. You know, everything had kind of these rituals that I didn't understand, that were secret.
How did you find your place within that? Was that then through experience and realising you do have a right to be there?
Well, you hang in there.
Yeah.
And then you watch people. Like, I remember seeing Jess Phillips talk in various different events. She would always put her hand up and be like, sorry, I don't really know whether I'm supposed to talk now, but I'm just going to say something. And I always used to be like, okay, that's...
Yes.
I need to kind of copy Jess a little bit and just try and bulldoze my way through. But it's hard. It's very intimidating.
They should change that whole chamber. They should change the whole lot. It should be in a new building, brand spanking new and sort of neutral, because it doesn't feel like that at all.
You've got a sort of track record with the Labour Party now, Will. In 2018, you interviewed then leader Jeremy Corbyn for a podcast, and you actually attended the Labour Party conference. Have you always been a Labour supporter?
No, I was more Lib Dem, to be honest. I was always interested in peaceful political protest and democracy. I mean, I protested when I was 16 at the Newbury Bypass and set up a sort of eco-society at school. And the thing is, because I'm posh, people think that I'm Tory, which was useful for a while, because I could get meetings with people because they'd be like, oh, it's a good old boy coming in. But now I think the game's up, because I spend a lot of time just slagging off the Tories on Instagram, and I really enjoy it. My favourite thing is to find really awful pictures of Liz Truss, and then I just put them up going, don't forget about her, you know, and I really enjoy that. But to be honest, I moved more towards Labour. Part of it was anti-Tory, which I think, obviously, with the latest by-election, so there's been a lot about that, like, are people pro-Labour or anti-Tory? But it was driven by that. And, you know, I think the final straw was seeing the parties during COVID and just the lack of... Because I've grown up around a lot of those that type of entitlement. My parents aren't like that. They're not snobby. And thank God. So I wasn't... It probably washed off a little bit of entitlement being in that sort of system, but not... I was never a full-on arsehole. But I know those arseholes because I went to school with them. I was taught by them. And I see them. And during COVID, that kind of level of, we deserve this, we are better than others.
Don't apply to us.
The rules don't, but it's more than that, though. It's not just the rules don't apply, it's that we're owed this, you know? And that just disgusted me. So while I'm in a funeral for my brother that's killed himself with my three family members, the worst, it wasn't a laugh a minute, you know, the 25 minutes or whatever it was in a crematorium in Berkshire. Why I'm having to stick to the rules, and I'm not the only one. So I just suddenly something flipped, switched to me, and I thought, these people they're the worst types of humans. There are some nice Tories. By the way, my local MP in Berkshire, she's Tory, Laura, I can't remember her surname now, but she did a lot for beagles, for testing on dogs, and she actually tabled a question in Parliament. So I don't want to tar them all with the same brush, but there's just such a disregard. And I just, the anger for others that I feel, I just suddenly switched, and that was it. And I thought, I'm going to use my platform. I'm sure I've now created my own, you know, no, I don't know how many floating voters are like following my Instagram. But, you know, thing is, what I really want to do is I want to go to Somerset and just put up massive billboards of Jacob Rees-Mogg in his constituency where he's reclining in the Commons, you know, that awful picture. Because I put that up about once a week, just going, don't forget this man. And I'm really toying with the idea
There's a little picture of Nish doing that behind you. Can you see?
Oh, my God, that's so funny. I mean, oh, God, it's just the word. And I'm thinking about blowing them up and putting them around in his constituency. Just for the hell of it, because I just want to see him tumble. You know, they're just the worst, and they create the division they've created. And it just makes me so angry and sad. So I've become a lot more activist, really. Mm. And I genuinely, by the way, think that if they were to continue in government, I think that this country would go to some sort of Armageddon, sort of George Orwell state, of because they just want to destroy it. And these people are terrifying. Because I don't even know if they believe, you know, the people like the Bravermans and, you know, I don't even know if they believe what they're saying, but they know the impact of it. You know what I mean? So like, perfect example,
yeah.
Gay immigrants. And stop me if I'm ranting, because I will just rant. But this is also my comedy show.
It sounds a lot like my comedy shows, I'll be honest with you.
This is why I know we're going to be best friends. You know, she came out and she'd done that thing in America, and then she, you know, spoke about gay migrants, which were like 0.2% of migrants anyway. She knows what she's doing. They all know. I mean, obviously she's gone now. I'm sure she'll try and rear her head again, but they all know what they're doing. It's targeting the vulnerable, and I just can't bear it. And then, you know, you ask the Home Office for statistics on LGBT migrants. They didn't have any. They didn't have any statistics. She's just making it up. Mm. And it's just mind-blowing to me. People need to know this. They're literally making it up the whole time and just targeting the vulnerable to create division, to create more headlines. And the worst thing about it all is they're just clinging. The whole drive behind it is just to, back to the corridors of power, is just to stay in power. They're clinging on. That's why he won't call an election. Just give me the power for another 6 months. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You've said that the UK is becoming a hostile environment for LGBTQIA people. Is that part of your fear about a potential Conservative victory, however remote the prospect seems at this point?
Yeah, I said that deliberately, by the way, because also that there are crossovers between being a performer and being a politician. You know how to get a headline. You know, you've got to give them a little quip. You know, you've got to give them a soundbite. And so I deliberately said, I feel scared as a gay man in this country because I wanted to get it out. That being said, I don't feel comfortable as a gay man on what I experience and also what I see for others, and particularly transgender people. You know, the kind of quips that you see in the House of Commons and the way it's being picked up as an issue. It's just another prime example of the Tories. And to be honest, I think Labour could be stronger on it. And that scares me because it's, again, they're just using marginalised groups to spread hate and try and garner more power. So I don't feel safe. I think the Braverman thing was actually the kind of final straw, really, for me. And that had just sort of happened around, I think, in the same week she'd done the LGBT people. And then she'd also, I'm a patron of a homeless charity. And she said, homelessness is a lifestyle choice. And, you know, I was just like, I also think that I think they're a bit they're mad. You know, that's the other thing, is they are sort of mad. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I think they need to be evaluated.
I should clarify what Suella actually said. It was fear and discrimination for being gay or a woman should not be enough to qualify for international refugee protection. Speaking to a US think tank,
yeah.
It was whether the application of the UN's 1951 Refugee Convention is fit for our modern age. That's always been her.
That's
always been her position, which is that the laws that already exist and are being gamed by people coming into the country.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Have you lost your faith in politics, or do you feel hopeful about the future
of it?
I'm
like the opposite. I've become more hopeful.
Oh, good. I'm so pleased.
Yeah, no, I really am, actually. I had a moment yesterday or the day before, and I was like, I might become an MP. I had a moment.
Oh my God, do it.
It was really funny. I think it was either listening to you, the by-election. It was all about the by-elections. I can't remember if it was your podcast on it, the latest one, or someone else. But anyway, I was thinking by elections. I was like, my God, I could become an MP. I'm really infused by it.
Text Keir Starmer.
I'm gonna text old K Dog.
Would you like genuinely though? Would you really think about it?
I would actually, because. This isn't a sales pitch for Labour, but I genuinely do feel hope. When I'm around the people in Labour, when I talk to them, the meetings I've had with them, you know, I had one good meeting with one good Conservative, Laura, as my local MP, and that's only because my mum basically beat her up on email.
It's Laura Farris,
I think. You know, and my mum did. My mum, her emails to Laura Farris were bordering on, I mean, maybe she wasn't reported, to be honest. I rang up my mum and I was like, quite strong wording to Laura. Well, you know, they need to do more. I said, I'm going to take a different approach, slightly more diplomatic and less swear words. but, you know, she was good. But other meetings I'd had with Tory people, it was really disappointing. And I get a lot of hope from Labour. And, you know, like Steve Reid, who's Shadow Defra. I mean, he's brilliant. They've just announced the fox hunting thing. They did the badges. And they're really hopeful. And I genuinely think that we need that in this country. And I need it as a citizen. You know, I want to feel like things aren't absolutely hopeless.
Mm. How would you find it being an MP, though? What do you, like, day to day?
Well, the dick pics would get me sent out within a day, to be honest. Let's be honest.
No, that's pretty standard, actually.
It's probably standard. I need more, don't I? I need more than that.
Yeah, get the archive out.
I mean, I think.
Listen, you can't do it in the chamber. We've discovered you can't be looking at porn in the chamber.
You can't do it and get found out doing it in the chamber.
He was looking at a tractor's website, wasn't he, or something?
It was
so funny. I mean, that is just... See, those politics for those kind of stories, I'm all here for. I don't get wound up about that. I mean, they're obviously mental, but it's so funny. I think I'd like it. I probably wouldn't toe the line and I'd probably... wouldn't last long.
And cabinet position, what do you fancy?
Oh, I'd go all in. Yeah, I'd go in for the cabinet.
Well, any in particular? Treasury, Home Sec, Foreign Sec?
I'd quite like Defra because it's a massive brief, but I'm a country boy, so I'd quite like that. But I'd probably have quite a few clashes because I know there's a lot of farming is, you know, Tory.
I can see this happening. Shout out to Labour leadership. Will Young's available.
Well, why not?
Why not?
Don't you think the funny thing, I really like Rishi Sunak talking at the Farmers Union. Have you seen that? And they've gone, he's quoted Eisenhower. I don't know if you saw this, but they've gone, so funny. He's such a dick. I feel really sorry for him because I actually think he might be an all right person, but I just think he's a bit of a dick. He just needs to like take all that money he's got and just don't do politics. Enjoy your life. You know, he's got like 750 million or something. Just enjoy your life. What's the man doing? Go off to the Maldives. Anyway, he's gone to the Farmers Union. He's clearly like his team has gone to, you know, there's a website, isn't there, for the best quotes? It's called something like Best Quotes.
Yeah, it's quite like quotable or something.
That's it.
Something
and if
like
you
that.
Type in for farming, the first quote that comes up is from Eisenhower. So they haven't even gone down the list. They haven't even got down the list. You know, at least get to like the fourth one. You know, it's just so funny. It does make me laugh.
Well, we're lucky they didn't scroll down too far, Will. Otherwise, Rishi Sunak would have ended up singing Old MacDonald to a group of understandably furious farmers.
I mean, I'm here for that. I'm here for that. I feel so sorry for him. I feel like he just is just not equipped. You know, everything from the Piers Morgan handshake taking the bet. He's just not equipped. He's just a nerdy guy who was Chancellor. You know, he just needs to, like, not do it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, listen, you've heard it here first, everybody. Will Young is setting out his stall to go from pop star to prime minister.
You'd be better than a significant number of the MPs that are already in Westminster.
I think I would, actually.
You would?
The next time you see me when I'm doing the full political campaign, I mean, I will be full on Trump by that stage. You know that, don't you? I'll just be, even if I met you, I'd just be saying, lies. Oh, you with your lefty lies, lies, lies.
Yeah, great. Go for it.
Will, you've got our vote. Thank you so much for taking the time and joining us. And good luck with the campaign and good luck with your future career in politics, I guess.
Oh, I need it. Thanks so much.
It's great that it started here.
Yeah. You're going to run my campaign.
Liz, we like to end the show by nominating a hero and villain of the week. Would you like to get us rolling by telling us who's your hero of the week?
Yes, I would. This week, I want to celebrate someone who has been fighting for children in care and for anyone who has gone through the care system. So here's Samantha Morton, who grew up in foster care and children's homes, using her amazing acceptance speech after receiving the BAFTA Fellowship Award at the weekend to highlight the issue.
And I dedicate this award to every child in care today, or who's been in care, or is suffering, or who didn't survive. And as the amazing actress Chrissy Rock once told me, don't let the bastards grind you down. Thank you.
Now, Samantha Morton doesn't need me bigging her up. So for my hero this week, I'm going for someone else a little less celebrated. Terry Galloway, who grew up in care, living in more than 100 different places. He now leads a campaign for councils to recognise care experience as a protected characteristic, like age, disability or religion. Last week, Cambridge City Council became the 80th council in England, Scotland and Wales to sign up. Here's Terry telling us what it all means.
Practically speaking, for the councils, it means that whenever they make decisions or design new services for their populations, they have to think about how those decisions and services affect care experience people. And what that will do is it will give care experience people voice in places that they haven't been heard before. I'm doing this because care experience people are 70% more likely to die prematurely than any other group. You know, I've lost my sister. We was at a funeral. By that time, she'd lost her children. She was really thin. She was addicted to drugs, addicted to alcohol. And basically she said to me, I don't want to be next, Terry. And all I could do to give her hope was to try and persuade her to let's use our experience to make it so that other people don't have to suffer like us. But unfortunately, she was next. And several months later, she was killed by a boyfriend. So this is really a promise to her and a dedication to all the care experience people out there. Hero of the week. Well, I'm humbled by it, and I really am, and I'm so grateful, but I'd like to pass that on to all the care experience people out there who are suffering, who have suffered, and who have fallen. You know, we've really got to get this system changed, and until it's changed and we've got practical, meaningful change for our care experience people so that they're not suffering, then I'll be a hero.
It's amazing, these people that dedicate their lives to making other people's lives better based on an experience that they've had. And I would also like to name check one more person in this area, a guy called Chris Wilde, who is exactly in a very similar position, grew up in care. He now works with children in care and he does everything he can to draw attention to their experience. He's been lobbying the government really hard to make this change for people to have their care experience protected as a characteristic, like many other protected characteristics are. So I think they're amazing people. They deserve all our love and support.
Absolutely incredible. Really, really, really powerful and really, really amazing people.
Yeah. Nish, who's your villain?
Well, my villain of the week is an anonymous sign writer at York Hospital, who represents a couple of different characteristics that I think people find suboptimal. Not least people who leave slightly aggy, passive-aggressive notes in the workplace. So York Hospital has actually had to apologise for a sign in the library that labelled Indian food as smelly. And this is what the sign actually said. The food and drinks policy, hot and cold drinks are allowed in the library. Please do not bring any food into the library space, especially not samosas, pakoras or filled chapatis, as they are very smelly. Someone posted a photo of this sign on the website formerly known as Twitter, with the poster asking, what was the need for the last sentence? And it's been viewed by more than 4 million people and attracted widespread criticism, and then shared on anti-racism social media pages, although the comments under the post seem to have descended into a debate about whether Indian food is smelly or not. The Hospital Trust said that the sign was absolutely not in line with its values and had been removed as soon as they were made aware of it. Now, look, listen, speaking as the children of Indian immigrants, you ungrateful people, we have brought you cuisine that tastes good. We have made your national dish into curry. I'm sorry if you think that food having smell is a bad thing and it can't all be a flavourless brown smush. But listen, the smell is good. Let the smell into your life. Let flavour into your lives. Otherwise, just, you know, spend the rest of your time eating boiled vegetables and hard potatoes. Just, it's the smell of Indian food is delicious. And I stand by this statement that anyone who complains about the smell of Indian food should be forced to eat nothing but boiled carrots for the rest of their fucking lives.
I get the sense that the person that wrote this sign maybe does just eat boiled carrots. I have a real picture of a lonely person, a joyless individual, if you like, sort of shaking his fist at the kids outside his house that are playing in the street and that type of thing.
Let chapatis into your life, my friend.
Yes.
Let samosas into your life. Let pakoras into your life. Food can taste good.
Open your heart to joy and smell.
You could get in touch with us, maybe to give us your best smelling foods, but you could do that by emailing us at psuk@reducedlistening.co.uk. It's always nice to hear your voices, so do send us a voice note on WhatsApp. Our number is 07514 644 572. Internationally, that's +44 7514 644 572.
And don't forget to follow @PodSaveTheUK on Instagram and Twitter. You can also find us on YouTube for access to full episodes and other exclusive content. And why not drop us a review too? Are we sure we want reviews?
Listen, we welcome the feedback.
Just not from the note guy. We don't want your reviews. You shush.
Thank you so much for filling in this week, Liz. Excitingly, you will also be back next week, but this time filling in for me.
Yeah. No, really exciting for listeners because a lot less you, a lot more me. So that's surely give the public what they want.
Give the public what they want.
And what are you going to be doing? You're going to be on Halls. You're just going to be enjoying your life.
I'm going to be in Los Angeles.
You're so fancy.
I'm going to be in Los Angeles wearing a big floppy hat and consuming legal marijuana. Pod Save the UK is a Reduced Listening production for Crooked Media.
Thanks to senior producer Musti Aziz and digital producer Alex Bishop.
Video editing was by Will Darkin and the music is by Vasilis Fotopoulos.
Thanks to our engineer David Degahi.
The executive producers are Anishka Sharma, Dan Jackson and Madeline Herringer, with additional support from Ari Schwartz.
Remember to hit subscribe for new shows on Thursdays on Amazon, Spotify or Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.